This is Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. Today our story is one which was written 85 years ago by Edward Everett Hale, a story which has found a place forever in our memories and our hearts. The Man Without a Country. There were few who noticed a brief announcement in the New York Herald in the summer of 1863. For one thing, there was other news. News of General Grant's victorious siege of Vicksburg. News that the armies of the North and South were marching over the dusty Pennsylvania roads that led to Gettysburg. Besides, it was only an announcement of a few lines which said, Nolan died on board the U.S. Corvette Levant. Latitude 2 degrees, 11 minutes south. Longitude 131 degrees west. On the 11th of May, Philip Nolan. But I noticed the announcement that Philip Nolan was dead, that he died at sea on a ship of his nation's Navy. I noticed because I'd served in the Navy. I'd met Philip Nolan now and again over the years, and I'd heard talk of him ever since I boarded my first ship. Philip Nolan was 80 years old and more when he died, and he'd been at sea for more than half a century. In all those lonely years, he never once stepped foot on his homeland, nor sighted her shores, nor heard her name spoken. Now at last this strange voyage was over. This strange lifetime was ended. They called him the Iron Mask because of his expressionless face. They called him Old Plain Buttons because of his uniform stripped of insignia. And they called him the Man Without a Country because...
Does Lieutenant Nolan care to make any statement regarding his loyalty to the United States?
Damn the United States! I wish I may never hear of the United States again!
It was back in the early years of the New Republic. It was in the early 1800s when young Philip Nolan rode southward from his father's Kentucky plantation in search of adventure and a career. He found adventure along the Natchez Trail that followed the Mississippi River to the southwest frontier. And he found a career in the United States Army as a dashing young lieutenant. He was in New Orleans, a gay city of sunshine and laughter, when a shadow fell across the valley of the Mississippi. The shadow of Aaron Burr, who dreamed of an empire of his own. Young Philip Nolan felt honored to be asked to a party given by the very best people, and felt thrilled when Aaron Burr himself took an interest in him, led him away from the others so they might talk in private.
They tell me, Lieutenant Nolan, sir, that you're one of the most brilliant officers in the West.
That's very kind, Mr. Burr.
From what I've heard of your ability, I'm surprised to find that it's still... Lieutenant Nolan.
Well, you know how the army is, sir. Advancements are slow in coming.
Yes, yes, even to the most worthy. And back in Washington, I dare say, they don't even know you exist out here.
Yes, you do sometimes wonder. That's a fact.
Indeed. They scarcely know this region exists for all they do about it. In fact, I sometimes wonder if these people don't deserve a government of their own. A government more responsible to the people.
I've never thought about it, sir. Of course, there's always talk, but I've never been interested in politics.
If I should find that my services would be useful in helping these good people to secure their rights, I should need the help of those as intelligent and daring as yourself.
Well, I hardly know what to say.
There's no need to say anything. Only remember, there is a tide in the affairs of men which, taken at its flood, leads on to fortune. We must take the current when it serves... or lose our ventures. My friends will be in touch with you, young man.
Oh, Lieutenant, wasn't it thrilling meeting Aaron Burr? I think he's the most distinguished man I've ever seen.
He seems to have a lot of ideas, too.
He seems like a man who wouldn't be afraid of action.
You would like that about him, wouldn't you? I told him you were, well, a little impulsive.
Impulsive? You mean just because I asked you to show me the rose garden?
But you asked before our introduction was even completed.
Well, you accepted the suggestion, didn't you?
Well, yes. Mr. Burr said that he liked a man who wasn't afraid to take chances. I agreed with him. Besides, my father asked me to be nice to you.
Your father, the governor?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think he even knew that I existed. After all, he's the governor of the territory. I'm only an ordinary army lieutenant.
Well, perhaps there are those who can judge ability and not just rank. You see, he too is interested in Aaron Burr's ideas to help the region.
And just what are those ideas, I wonder?
I'm sure I wouldn't know, but Father said I might ask you to call sometime. He'd like to talk with you.
Say, maybe I could explain some of my ideas about the conduct of the army here.
Perhaps so. I wouldn't be surprised if General Wilkinson was here, too.
The general? Is he interested in Burr's plans?
Oh, everyone's interested in Aaron Burr. And they say that he's the kind of man to reward those who help him.
Well, you're sure getting high and mighty, Lieutenant. What's this talk about you seeing General Wilkinson?
I think that may be my affair.
I just wonder. Generals send him for lieutenants. It doesn't seem much like this man's army.
Maybe there are going to be some changes made in this man's army.
I've heard talk about changes, but not just in the army.
You have? Maybe you know more than I do.
Come off it, Nolan. Everybody knows there's talk. But of course, I don't have any influential friends to give me the straight information.
Maybe that's too bad. Or maybe you like the idea of being a lieutenant all your life.
Maybe I do, better than some other ideas.
Well, maybe I don't. I didn't join up to sit around in a barracks year in and year out. Nothing ever happens here. The government doesn't even know we exist. Well, maybe they'll find out someday. Learn to pay a little more attention to us.
Well, when you get these things reorganized, remember I knew you when you were just a lieutenant like myself, huh?
Just wait. You'll see when the time comes.
But the time never came, for Aaron Burr was seized and accused of treason, of plotting to establish a government of his own in the Mississippi Valley. Some people in high places were implicated, and the shadow of suspicion fell on some smaller fry as well, among them Philip Nolan. He was so unimportant that the charges against him were vague, and his trial was long postponed. When the court finally came to his case, he was treated with an almost contemptuous kindness. Since there was no actual evidence, his trial might have been a mere formality, except...
It seems to me that the defendant knew so little about what was going on that his testimony has little interest. Unfortunately, perhaps there is no law against being simply foolish and impressionable. However, the defendant was also a soldier in the uniform of the United States. Do you think you wore that uniform with honor, sir?
You can look up my record as a soldier. I used to be told it was a brilliant one.
As far as I can tell, it shows that you cut a handsome figure on a horse supplied by the United States, and that you look deuced attractive dancing the quadrille in a uniform supplied by the United States.
I tried to do my duty, sir. Sometimes I wondered myself if our time wasn't being wasted.
You feel that at all times you did your full duty as a soldier and as a citizen of the United States?
Well, I thought so. It's hard to tell now.
Do you think that you disgraced the uniform of the United States?
At the time, I may not have been aware. I may have misunderstood.
Do you care to make any statement regarding your loyalty to the United States?
Oh, damn the United States! I wish I may never hear of the United States again.
What did he say?
What was that?
He said, damn the United States.
Well, I wish I may never hear of the United States again.
A traitor.
That's treason.
Order, order. I declare this court temporarily adjourned. Prisoner, hear the sentence of the court. The court decides, subject to the approval of the president, that you shall have your wish fulfilled, that you shall never hear the name of the United States again.
Philip Nolan, former lieutenant in the United States Army, was stripped of the insignia on his uniform and placed aboard a ship.
for it was decided that his wish and his sentence might best be fulfilled at sea. The captain of the ship received instructions from the office of the Secretary of the Navy, which he passed on to his officers.
This person, on his trial by court-martial, expressed with an oath the wish that he might never hear of the United States again. The court sentenced him to have his wish fulfilled.
You will take the prisoner on board your ship and keep him there with such precautions as shall prevent his escape. He is to be exposed to no indignity of any kind, nor is he ever unnecessarily to be reminded that he is a prisoner.
But under no circumstances is he ever to hear of his country or to see any information regarding it. And you will especially caution all the officers under your command to take care that in the various indulgences which may be granted, this rule, in which his punishment is involved, shall not be broken.
And so Philip Nolan stepped on shipboard for the first time. It was in 1807. He was still less than 30 years old, a tall, erect figure dressed in a regulation army uniform from which all the insignia had been stripped. He was pleasant and friendly enough and got along well with the men. They were cautioned not to speak of the United States in his presence. And the books, magazines, and newspapers which he read had all references to his native country cut from them before they were passed into his hands. At the Cape of Good Hope, someone had the fortune to borrow a number of new English books. One of them, The Lay of the Last Minstrel by Sir Walter Scott. Philip Nolan, who read aloud very well, took his turn at reading them one day. And those stirring rhymes of the Scotch border held us all spellbound.
Say, that's not bad for poetry.
Well, I'll say that's as good as a story any day.
Now, go ahead, Nolan. Give us some more.
As soon as I moisten my tongue, gentlemen. There. All right. This is the way it goes on. Breathes there the man with soul so dead, who never to himself hath said, "This is my own. My native land. This is my own, my native land. Whose heart hath ne'er within him burned, as home his footsteps he hath turned from wandering on a foreign." Here, someone else take this book. And the devil take it, or the sea. There! Excuse me, gentlemen. Good day.
He threw the book overboard.
Why didn't someone tell us that was in there?
Oh, did you see how white he was, poor chap?
Philip Nolan disappeared into his stateroom. We didn't see him again for 2 months. When he returned, he was older, expressionless, and kept more to himself. But even he couldn't escape the excitement on shipboard when we found we were heading for home.
When I get home, I'm going to take an oar and start walking inland. When someone asks me what I'm carrying on my shoulder, that's where I'm going to settle down. I'll know I'm far enough away from the sea.
Oh, matey, when I was a lad, I never thought I'd be coaxing to bring in firewood, but I'll chop down the whole woodlot for some fried chicken and, oh, an apple pie.
Yeah, the woods will just be turning red and yellow when I get home. There'll be frost in the mornings. Just right for squirrel hunting.
The more you see of the world, the better you like those good old United States.
Hey, quiet. Here comes Nolan.
Yeah, pipe down the talk of home.
Why can't he stay in his stateroom where he belongs?
Whenever Philip Nolan appeared, conversation ceased. For all talk was about the land of which he was not to hear. He was more lonely than ever. Even the wind seemed to whisper of home as we drew nearer. And Philip Nolan stood at the rail hour after hour listening to the wind. But then whatever thoughts he had behind that expressionless face were interrupted by the captain's orders.
Mr. Nolan, you will gather your belongings and personal effects and prepare to quit this ship. Tomorrow we will meet and you will board another vessel, an outbound vessel which you will join on her cruise. That is all, except to thank you for your company and for your conduct while you were with us.
20 times or more, Nolan was transferred from one ship to another. His stateroom changed, but one day was like another, one deck like another, one sea like another. But he did remember the blue Mediterranean and the Bay of Naples, for a strange thing happened there. A dance was held on board his ship with the company of lovely ladies, the friends of local government officials and English and American visitors. Even Nolan was invited to attend, and scarcely was the dancing begun when his shipmates were startled to see him approach the most beautiful lady at the ball and to see her smile as he spoke.
Laura,
Laura. I mean, Miss Rutledge. Is it really you?
Of course, Mr. Nolan. I haven't changed so much as to frighten you, have I?
Oh, no, no, you haven't changed. You haven't changed at all. But it seems I must be dreaming to meet you here.
We've been traveling this winter, and we're visiting Naples at present. They told me you'd be here. I wondered if you'd still recognize me.
Seems like a miracle. May I have the honor of this dance, Miss Rutledge?
Of course, Mr. Nolan. It's not Miss Rutledge now, Philip. It's Mrs. Graff.
Oh, I didn't know. Of course, I...
Yes, it's been some years since I've been married. It wasn't long after... It seems forever, doesn't it?
Yes, forever. But you're the same. And the music is so much the same.
I didn't know whether I should come here or not. Whether I should see you.
I'm glad you did. I can't tell you how glad... Even though things have changed so much. How is everything? Tell me everything about home.
Home? Home, Mr. Nolan? I thought you were the man who never wanted to hear of home again.
Philip Nolan seemed even older after that. In fact, those who remember him aboard ship seem always to remember him as an old man. But once, when a ship on which he was sailing, a ship with a forgotten name, suddenly ran into a duel with a foreign vessel, he suddenly appeared with his shoulders straight, his voice firm, and a different look in his eye. It was after a round shot had struck a gun crew station, killing the officer and wounding the men, and there was a ramrod in his hands.
Come on, lads. Look alive now. Hold your posts.
Yes, sir.
Let the sergeant's men clear away the wounded. We've got to man this gun, do you hear me?
Yes, sir.
You there. You badly hurt?
I don't think so, sir.
Lend a hand with the loading gun, then. I've got her aim. Now, set her up. That's it, lads. Step lively now. We'll fire her till she melts.
What's going on here? They told me this gun was out of action.
Aye, sir. That's right, Captain.
The gun's been firing, hasn't it? Where's Mr. Harlow?
He's below, sir. Been badly wounded, sir.
Who's been firing this gun? You, Nolan, what are you doing here?
I was showing them how we handle big guns in the artillery, sir. All ready there? Touch her up.
That was a hit, Nolan. Let the artillery proceed.
Mr. Nolan, now that victory is ours, I'd like to say that our entire crew is grateful to you for what you did today. Today you were one of us. You will be named in the dispatches to the Naval Department. What action they will take, I do not know, but for myself, I would like to give you this sword of mine.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. It's been many years since I wore a sword.
May you wear it with the honor with which you acquitted yourself today.
They say the captain recommended that Nolan be pardoned. Perhaps he did. But by this time, the man without a country had been forgotten. Those who had ordered his punishment were dead or had retired from public life. Those who came into authority simply carried out the orders that had been given. It was as if destiny itself had decided that he have his wish, that he never hear of the United States again. He himself did all he could to help those required to have him in their charge. In the South Atlantic, his ship captured a slave schooner, freed the captured natives, and imprisoned the officers and crew. But no one could understand the language of the liberated natives until Nolan offered his services as interpreter. He discovered that a few of them could speak Portuguese, for they had worked for white men on the African coast. The ship's commander told Nolan to inform them they would be put ashore at the nearest port, Cape Palmas. But Nolan returned from his mission with his face drawn as if in pain, with beads of sweat on his white forehead.
What's the matter, man? Couldn't you make them understand?
Yes, sir.
Well, then, what is it they want?
They beg you not to put them off at Cape Palmas. They say that they'd be free, that they'd be safe, but they'd be far from home. So far from home, they might never get there. Might never see home again.
Good Lord, what do they expect me to do?
I'll try to tell you in their own words, Captain. Take us home, they say. Take us to our country, to the land of our houses. to our own fields and our own families.
Oh, the poor devils. I guess they're human after all.
One of them says he has an old father and mother who'll die if they don't see him. Another says his people are sick and need his help. Another says he would rather die a slave than wander the earth from his own country.
You needn't go on, Nolan. Tell them they shall go to the mountains of the moon if they will. If I have to sail the schooner through the great white desert, they shall go home.
I'll try to tell them, sir. I'm sure they'll be most grateful.
The men who sailed with Nolan in later years scarcely knew his story. He became a legend and a myth rather than a living man. There were those who came to know and love him well, though there was always a barrier between them. It was one of these, an old shipmate of mine, who wrote to me when at last Philip Nolan's long voyage to nowhere drew to a close. It was written from the U.S. Corvette Levant.
I tried to find heart to tell you that it is all over with poor old Nolan. The other day, the doctor called me to his stateroom and I entered with him. This was the first time, as far as I know, that anyone had ever been there. Nolan was lying in his bunk, and the doctor's glance confirmed what I could see. The end was not far off.
Hello. Hello there. I'm glad that you could come.
You're tired. Perhaps you should rest, and I'll come back.
No, no. I haven't had much company here. But I guess it's all right now. I see that you're surprised to see my cabin.
Yes, I had no idea. It's like a shrine. Flag on the wall, stars and stripes, picture of George Washington, and a map of the United States.
Yes, I drew it myself. Drew it from memory.
Oh.
You see, here I have a country of my own. Country few have loved, perhaps as much as I, for I've had the time to think of what it means.
Oh, I'm sure if they'd known, Mr. Nolan, if they'd only realized you'd have gone free long ago.
That's not important now. Indeed, it never was. My punishment was just enough. It was only to have my wish fulfilled.
But loving her so, you might have served your country better, been so much more useful.
Perhaps I have served her well. Better than if I had been easily pardoned. I would have served her well if, because of me, others realize what it means to be without a country. There's no bitterness in my heart. Each year has taught me to love my country all the more. But tell me what has happened to my country. Surely there's no harm in telling me now.
No, there's no harm now. Your map's a little out of date, Mr. Nolan. There are new stars in the flag, with more to come.
New stars. New states. Draw them on my map for me.
Well, very well, Mr. Nolan, as best I can. The settlers pushed on westward, found homesteads on the prairies and the plains. Indiana, Illinois, Kansas, and Missouri. They fought the winters in the north and pushed the frontier back through the wilderness. Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota. They died at the Alamo that Texas might be free and then become a state.
They told him of the strife between the North and the South, of the war between brothers, of a man named Grant who promised victory for the Union, and of Abraham Lincoln who longed to bind up the nation's wounds with charity for all and malice toward none.
Look. Look in the book.
You mean this one?
That's right. Yeah. Read where it's marked.
For ourselves and our country.
For ourselves and our country.
Oh, gracious God, we thank thee.
Oh, gracious God, we thank thee.
That notwithstanding our manifold transgressions of thy holy laws.
That notwithstanding our manifold transgressions of thy holy laws.
Thou hast continued to us thy marvelous kindness. Doctor, I guess there's no need to go on.
Nolan's voice died away. At last he had found a home and a country. They took his Bible and found a slip of paper. A slip of paper on which he had written,
"Bury me in the sea. It has been my home and I love it. But will not someone set up a stone for my memory at Fort Adams or Orleans, that my disgrace may not be more than I ought to bear? Say on it, in memory of Philip Nolan, Lieutenant in the Army of the United States. He loved his country as no other man has loved her, but no man deserved less at her hands.
So lived and died Philip Nolan, the man without a country. There is no stone for his memorial, only his story. A memorial more lasting than a monument. Whenever it is heard, let each of us remember that any man is without a country who, by his sneers or by looking backward or by revealing his country's secrets to her enemy, checks for 1 hour the movements which lead to peace among the nations of the world, or weakens the arm of the nation in her determination to secure justice between man and man, and in general to secure the larger life of her people.
You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. And now it's our privilege to hear from a past national commander of the Legion from Massachusetts, Mr. Daniel J. Dougherty.
The American Legion has been fighting subversive influences since its birth in 1919, when no one else foresaw the possibility that such influences might actually endanger our American heritage of freedom under God. Legionnaires battled alone for many years, until the menace became too apparent to be overlooked by the nation at large. In 1950, the American Legion succeeded in assembling representatives from some 35 national organizations for the purpose of forming an independent group to be called the All-American Conference to Combat Communism. The conference is presently made up of some 50 groups representing a cross-section of interests in the American scene: veterans groups, fraternal lodges, women's service clubs, and religious groups, each maintaining its independence, but working toward a common goal, the uprooting of godless communism and other subversive elements in America. Its approach to the problem is positive. Its aim is to transmute negative anti-communist feeling into dynamic and active Americanism. To this end, one of the conference's united activities is sponsorship of an annual Know Your America Week. In observance of this week, the community units of conference member organizations are encouraged to work together in their hometowns to reemphasize the benefits of our free American society. The conference provides program suggestion kits to the organization's community leaders and lends all possible aid. This year, Know Your America Week was commemorated in 2,700 communities throughout the nation. This is just one way in which the All-American Conference to Combat Communism is succeeding in heightening the spirit of cooperation that is so much a part of our American way. A memorial to the Legion's untiring Americanism efforts, the conference directs this vigorous enthusiasm to the opposition of the communist conspiracy and rededication to our American inheritance.
Thank you, Mr. Dougherty. Next week, Inheritance will again take you on a journey through the pages of American history. Today's story was written by Jack Wilson. Included in the cast were Santos Ortega, Mandel Kramer, Jan Miner, Kenneth Del Mar, Bob Hastings, and John Gibson. Inheritance was produced by Wade Arnold and directed by Harry Frazee. This is Bill Hanrahan speaking.
Enjoy fine variety entertainment on the Dennis Day Show on NBC.